Listeners, just a heads up. This chat will include some really graphic details of alleged abuse. This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm Sam Sanders, sitting in for Shumita Basu. Today, what we know about the allegations against Sean Diddy Combs. Back in the 90s, Sean Diddy Combs, the rapper and record executive, he and his label Bad Boy Records helped shift the center of pop music from rock and grunge to hip-hop, with number one singles like this one. Can't nobody take my pride. Can't nobody hold me down. Oh no, I got to keep on moving. Quit that. Then Combs became a force in the fashion world with his line Sean John. There were also extensive endorsement deals with alcohol labels like Ciroc.
Ciroc, ultra premium vodka.
And there was an incredibly popular reality show that Combs hosted, Making the Band.
You know what I'm saying? But I need greatness. I don't need good. This is a business. You got to figure out how to please the consumers, how to come up with something different, how to fill a void in the marketplace. You're going to have to keep on working.
All of this,
working.
Combs' version of celebrity, multi-platform, multi-hyphenate, it kind of set the mold on how to be a superstar in our current era. You could even argue that he was one of the first and most successful influencers. But that empire is tumbling. In recent months, dozens of allegations have come out against Combs. These allegations include people who say they were raped, sexually assaulted, or otherwise verbally or physically abused by Combs.
Sean Diddy Combs faces another new lawsuit.
We're back with new allegations of sexual harassment and assault against Sean Diddy Combs.
New surveillance footage appears to corroborate some of the allegations of abuse.
The Grammy winner said enough is enough, denying all the allegations and vowing to fight on.
Rolling Stone reporters Cheyenne Roundtree and Nancy Dillon are out with some of the most extensive accounts yet of the decades of allegations against Combs. They contacted more than 300 people from Combs' past, and they got more than 50 people to go on the record. This whole story first broke open in November 2023. That's when Combs' former girlfriend, Cassie Ventura, filed a lawsuit against him. She accused him of rape, physical abuse, sexual misconduct, and sex trafficking. Here's Cheyenne Roundtree from Rolling Stone.
Cassie was a young model in New York, and she wanted to be a singer. I think people will best know her song, Me and You. It was an early 2000s bop, and very quickly, she was signed to Bad Boy and just became this kind of face of next, you know, pop star sort of thing.
Yeah.
The music video is great. And then she kind of became more so known as a singer, but also her relationship with Diddy. They were very much power couple goals. She had a 10-album deal with Bad Boy, and she only did one album.
Wow.
And it was after that first album, she kind of just became known as Diddy's girlfriend. And that's kind of what we knew of her, just the Me and You singer. And I don't know if anyone questioned it too much of like, where's Cassie's music? It just kind of was her new kind of status was his girlfriend.
So while Cassie is orbiting Diddy, partnered with Diddy for some 12 years, not releasing music, what is going on behind the scenes? Or what is she alleged went on behind the scenes?
It kind of started at her 21st birthday, she said. It was a very slow progression, I guess, that he tried to corner her and kiss her, and then it just escalated. And she says that he just became really involved in her personal life, from medical records being sent to him directly. Her apartment was in his name. It was just everything was under his control. And she alleges that physical abuse started then. And then eventually it escalated again to sexual abuse and sexual trafficking, she claims.
Yeah. What was the term that he would use? Y'all allude to it in the story. Freak offs, freak nights. What was that, Nancy?
So according to the lawsuit, these encounters would be set up in hotels
there would be a lot of drugs. There would be sex workers brought in. She was asked to have sex with the sex workers as Diddy watched. Mm. And according to the lawsuit, he would masturbate. And these also were filmed. And you can assume that that was for him to watch or share afterward. Mm-hmm. So she describes being slathered in oil. It just seemed that it was very orchestrated and curated to a degree of, you know, extreme control, that she would paint her nails a certain color. Like, that is the level of control he had over the way these would unfold. And according to the lawsuit, they involved often violence as well.
Just one day after Cassie filed her lawsuit against Combs, the two reached a settlement. But Combs denied her allegations, and his lawyer told the New York Times that settling was, quote, in no way an admission of wrongdoing. Then, a few weeks ago, CNN obtained an explosive video. Surveillance footage showing Combs assaulting Cassie at the Intercontinental Hotel in Los Angeles in 2016. The video is graphic and disturbing. You see Cassie run to the elevators, and then Combs chases her wearing only a towel. Then he grabs Cassie by the head, throws her to the ground, and kicks her repeatedly. He also throws what appears to be a vase at her. A few days after that video was published, Combs posted a video apologizing for the incident.
I take full responsibility for my actions in that video. I'm disgusted. I was disgusted then when I did it. I'm disgusted now. I went and I sought out professional help. I had to go into therapy and go into rehab. Had to ask God for his mercy and grace. I'm so sorry.
Since Cassie filed her lawsuit back in 2023, 7 additional people have also sued Combs for sexual assault, among other charges. One of those plaintiffs is Joy Dickerson Neal. She, like Cassie, filed under a New York law for adult survivors of sexual assault. When they filed, that law was about to expire.
Joy Dickerson Neal says in her lawsuit that that was the impetus for her. She read Cassie's lawsuit and was, you know, moved to file her lawsuit.
Joy Dickerson Neal was a college student who appeared in one of Combs' videos in the 90s. She alleges that in 1991, Combs drugged and sexually assaulted her. She also claims that he recorded the assault and showed the tape to other people. In another suit, Liza Gardner claims that Combs coerced her into sex after meeting him at a party when she was 16, and that a friend of Combs also raped her. She also claims that Combs came to her home a few days later and attacked her again. A spokesperson for Combs called both women's claims, quote, fabricated. Now, on top of all the civil suits against Combs, there is also a federal investigation underway. Back in March, agents raided 2 of Combs' properties in LA and Miami. His adult sons were handcuffed, the whole thing was televised, and as of this interview, a grand jury is being assembled. I asked Nancy what she expects to happen.
I spoke to a former federal prosecutor who worked on the R. Kelly case, and she explained, you know, just based on Cassie's lawsuit alone, she believes that they're looking at a potential racketeering case.
And that means, for those who don't know?
So a racketeering case would be basically a pattern of criminal behavior that's tied to an enterprise. So in his case, it could be, this is all allegedly, it could be Bad Boy. It could be something legitimate.
So it's like, he wasn't just like doing one-off crimes against women and sometimes men. There was collusion and organization and a system to do it.
There's an organization, and that people inside were acting in his interest to carry out alleged crimes. But they could also not do that. They could charge sex trafficking. They could look at the Mann Act, which makes it illegal to bring someone across state lines for illegal sex. So they have options.
Yeah. I mean,
we don't know what they got.
How will both of you as journalists working on this story feel if America ends up watching a puffy sex abuse racketeering trial?
It will be a very difficult trial for the witnesses.
Yeah.
I think facing someone in a courtroom face to face is the bravery that it takes is almost superhuman. And I've covered a lot of trials. I covered the Tory Lanez trial, and watching Megan Thee Stallion get up on the stand, it was really just an incredible sight. And that was such a divisive trial. I can only imagine what this trial would probably also be like. But then again, maybe not. I mean, this video of Cassie being attacked in the hallway, you know, I think a lot of people have processed that. And that image is pretty seared in my memory at this point.
Yeah.
But to hear people give a firsthand account on a witness stand and to be cross-examined is, I mean, that's what our justice system is for, but it's also very intense. And I can imagine that this trial will be massive.
People in Combs' inner circle have also come forward to corroborate his history of violent behavior. Roger Bonds, Combs' former head of security, recently went on Piers Morgan's show to say he'd seen Combs be violent toward women, quote, 4 or 5 times.
I seen him get into some wrestling and punching matches, and sometimes I felt like, what are you mad at? What are you upset about? Because it's a deeper anger when you hitting and punching a woman in that type of manner.
In their reporting for Rolling Stone, Cheyenne and Nancy went even further back into Combs' past, and they found people who alleged abuse from his days at Howard University back in the late 80s.
And this is before he was famous. I mean, he was locally famous for his parties, but not a name at Bad Boy yet. So we thought, let's go look at that era, and just started making this huge spreadsheet of names of everyone we could find who was there at that time, and found people who were willing to talk.
They learned about one incident where Combs allegedly beat his then girlfriend outside her dorm with what appeared to be a belt. Classmates witnessed the assault and screamed for him to stop.
When we heard the first account of the alleged beating outside the dorm, it was so vivid. Mm-hmm. And just the amount of detail was like, okay, this is something this person's been holding on to for a long time.
Mm-hmm. That says a lot about what he thought he could get away with.
So we knew about this before the video of the Intercontinental Hotel came out. And seeing that, you know, that's in a hallway that, you know, it's not your private space.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just struck me that, oh, this seems to comport with that, that this allegedly is someone who's able to act out his aggression in public spaces.
You can see his temperament and volatility in his own documentary from 2017.
I'm a savage! Oh! I'm a savage! Whatever I want, I'm going to get! Whatever I want, I have to get!
In fact, Combs' temper is how he got his original nickname, Puffy.
It's in Jet magazine, and he explains that he got that nickname from a friend when he was a child because he says, quote, I had a temper and I would huff and puff.
Wow.
And it's funny because I saw some video that he did with someone later on, just this is actually very recent in the last decade, and they asked the same question, how did you get your nickname? And he said, next question.
Really?
So he answered it in the beginning of his career, but now he doesn't like to answer that question.
That's wild. That's wild.
I think for me, it was the stark difference between who he appears publicly to be and who sources are alleging who he is in private.
Yeah.
And I think along his career, we have seen little bursts of these moments of these, you know, encounters or altercations he would get in.
Mm-hmm.
Or there'll be something on Making the Band where you see just this like sliver of a personality that doesn't register with who he is.
And we should point out Making the Band was his reality show where he was making several music groups and he would have these outbursts of rage and anger against the contestants.
Keep on f***ing up these words. Matter of fact, take this downstairs, say it outside. It's your lack of appreciation. This is disgusting.
And we all thought back then it was good TV.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was a reality show, but I guess we didn't realize how much reality was in that personality. And so a lot of sources would speak to this unbridled rage that could pop out. And we have a source that said, and I thought this was a really clear view into his personality, is like he does not believe in being told no.
I remember the heyday of Bad Boy. I was in New York during that period.
Yeah.
He was so flashy. You know, all the people who would attend his parties, it was just like the glitterati of New York. He was
we call him like a fun-loving bon vivant. You know, he's mm-hmm. this really iconic figure. And then he just gets bigger and bigger. He becomes a movie star. Like, we're kind of forgetting that he was in a bunch of big feature films. He was in Get Him to the Greek, which is a
movie. He was in that movie.
And he's playing kind of like an outsized version of himself. But he got great reviews for that.
I remember
that. He sort of became part of this like alt comedy world.
Mm-hmm.
He was in like a Lonely Island video.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and then he was in a Disney movie, the Muppets movie. So he really managed to become this family-friendly, almost mainstream superstar.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were these glimmers of violence or these, you know, small blips, but he was always able to rise above it and just outshine it and just like sort of make it go away. To know that while he's in a Disney movie, this is the era that he's having freak-offs with Cassie, allegedly,
it's wild
to me.
I remember him for me, so as a young black boy, seeing him and saying, he is not the best rapper, this is not the best music, but he offers an aspirational trail. He's someone that was crossover. He's someone that was multi-platform. A lot of the way he manages his persona and his career, I found aspirational, specifically as a black man. And so I've had to do a lot of rethinking about what I liked about him. And are the things that I liked about him, were they actually some tells of how dark all this stuff was?
Well, I think what I was just thinking about when you were talking was how he really was this, like, icon and aspirational.
Yeah.
He meant something to the culture.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, when you're looking at, some people say, like, why didn't these people say anything ahead, the women and men, the plaintiffs in these lawsuits, why didn't they say something sooner? And it's like, well, you're going up against not just a billionaire, but you're going up against someone who, you know, is also a philanthropist, is meaningful, is doing things for society. And that's really hard to break that down, to, you know, be the person to say, well, look what happened to me. Like, okay, that's great, but look what happened to me. And so I think that is a real daunting prospect for someone to speak up.
Yeah, yeah.
Something that really stuck out to me was one of our sources in this piece, who goes by Anna, and she was saying that she had this encounter with Diddy. He was trying to obtained sex from her through her boss, and she found out afterwards, so she was already out of the room. But she's just like, I don't know what to do with this. It sat with me. Mm-hmm. Who can I tell? Mm-hmm. Where can I go? And when I called her, this was the first thing that she wanted to talk about. She's like, I'm so glad I can tell someone else, and it fits into this context of a larger pattern that I've known personally for years.
Mm-hmm.
Like Nancy said, it's tremendous bravery coming forward. And on top of that, like, you know, Puffy has been a pillar of the black community, a pillar of the music industry for decades now. And so I can't imagine coming forward, especially, you know, Joy Dickerson-Neal worked in the music industry, to come forward against a colleague of someone that means so much to people. I can only assume it's so scary. And that's why they said they kept quiet for so long, is because they were scared of that exact reason.
I would like to add to that, just especially with Joy. In her lawsuit, she did go to the police.
Mm.
Not immediately, but not that long after. Mm. She went to the, according to her lawsuit, to the police in New York and in New Jersey.
Wow.
And she was told that she needed more.
Really?
And so, I mean, you're told that. I mean, she's a young black woman. What do you do with that?
Yeah.
Because you feel like you have no power. You tried.
Mm-hmm.
But then this person got more and more celebrity and power and wealth. And how how do you go against that?
How do you go against that?
And then she saw Cassie's lawsuit.
Wow. Wow. I can't help but think about how the allegations against Diddy fit into the Me Too movement as a whole. You know, a few years ago, we saw this movement rush through Hollywood. It's hard to say what the longstanding change will be, but it was definitely a moment. But I have had several conversations since then over the last several years, and a few in the months that we've known about these Diddy allegations, where people who work in music and in TV and film, they've said to me, more than one person, oh, Sam, if you think the Me Too issues that women were dealing with in Hollywood were bad, it is even worse in the music industry. Everyone said it's even worse in the music industry. Why? Do we know why?
Well, I think it's an industry that, on top of being super glamorous, everyone wants to be in it. You know, close to the celebrity aspect of it is just very alluring. And, you know, music happens late at night in clubs, in recording studios. There's a party vibe that goes with it. A lot of times that party aspect includes drugs and alcohol. And a lot of people in the music industry are kind of gig workers, you know, a lot of freelancers, a lot of...
There are no union protections for most of these artists.
Well, there's no HR to go to.
There's no set with, like, someone in charge.
I mean, you can, I guess you could go, if there's a label attached, you go there. But, you know, you're on the road, you're touring, this, that. You know, it's really... You're kind of on your own. You're being kind of a gig type of industry. Your network is everything. You know, if you make... an accusation, what does that do for your prospects going forward? It's this ecosystem that's really engineered for the people at the top.
What have the women told you they want in terms of justice?
I think justice, I think it's different for everyone. I think a big part of it is the truth being out there and that people see Diddy for who they know him to be. I think that has been one of the biggest things throughout all this was just piercing that veil. So I can't answer to what, you know, they want individually for justice or accountability, but I'd have to imagine a big relief is that there is space now for people to believe them when they say that these things happen to them.
If you're listening in the Apple News app, we've queued up Cheyenne and Nancy's reporting for Rolling Stone to play next. If you're listening in the podcasts app, search for Apple News Plus Narrated to find it. We'll also link to it in our show notes page.